For the rest of this hour, we'll be talking about asthma. Chances are good you either know someone with asthma or have asthma yourself. It's a chronic lung condition. During an asthma attack, a patient has trouble breathing. Severe attacks can lead to hospitalization or even death. New research being reported this week in the New England Journal of Medicine looks at the role of the immune system in causing asthma and finds a particular type of immune cell overlooked in the past that appears to be associated with asthma. Joining me now to talk about it is one of the authors of the article, Dr. Dale Umetsu. He's a senior associate in medicine in the Department of Immunology at the Children's Hospital Boston and the Prince Turki Al-Saud Professor of Pediatrics at Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to the program, Dr. Umetsu.
All right, thank you.
And you're welcome to join us, too. Give us a call at our numbers are 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And so what is this this new cell that you've been focusing on?
Well, these new cells are called natural killer T cells. And these cells have not been studied much in the past because the technology to identify them and to isolate them has not been available until just recently. So what we've shown is that asthma is caused not by T helper 2 cells, as been previously thought, but by this novel class of cells called natural killer T cells.
Now, when you say asthma is caused by these natural killer T cells, I mean, presumably we all have them. Why do some people get asthma and some people not?
Well, that's a complex question.
I ask the complex questions, and you give me the simple answers. That's the,
sure.
That's the way it works.
Well, we know that from our previous studies in mice that in the absence of NK T cells...
That's the natural killer T cells.
Right, the right. Natural killer T cells. We could not induce asthma in mice. In our current studies, we've shown that the majority of the T cells in the lungs of patients with moderate to severe asthma were not the Th2 cells, but really these natural killer T cells.
I see. Okay, so knowing that those cells are there, how does that help you, you know, deal with this issue? Is it strictly a scientific advance at this point, or does it suggest clinical applications?
Well, I think that until now, most people have really focused on the role of the helper T cell in trying to look at the pathogenesis of asthma, and therefore the treatments for asthma have in the past focused on Th2 cells. It turns out that the treatments for asthma that focus on Th2 cells really don't seem to affect the natural killer T cell. And so I think in the future, as we develop better therapies that do target these natural killer T cells, that we will be able to have better therapies that are more effective for asthma.
You know, it occurs to me we've been speaking very specifically about this immune system cells and what might be causing the asthma, but maybe I should back up here and ask you, you know, what is asthma? How is it defined, and what are the symptoms, and, you know, what do people typically do with it or do about it?
Sure. Well, we think of asthma these days as an inflammatory disease where there's a significant amount of inflammation in the airways. And this inflammation results in the symptoms of asthma, which include shortness of breath, tightness in the chest, and wheezing. And oftentimes the wheezing comes and goes depending on the other nonspecific stimuli, such as cold air or exercise, and sometimes infection. When those stimuli are present, then the airways go into a spasm due to this inflammation that's present in the lungs. So the treatments for asthma are try to reduce this inflammation and thereby reducing the symptoms that are associated with asthma.
And how well does medicine manage asthma today?
Well, there are effective medications. The primary medication today is corticosteroids, which is mostly used by the inhalation route, although it can be used by the oral route or intravenous route. And that does reduce inflammation in the airways, but clearly there are patients who don't respond to corticosteroids, and that may possibly be due to the fact that NKT cells appear to be resistant to the effects of corticosteroids.
And as I understand, there's two kinds of treatments for asthma. There's sort of this long-term prevention treatment, and then there are these acute, you know, get me some air right now treatments.
That's correct. So there are what's called the controller medications, which are focused on reducing the inflammation in the airways. And there are also the quick relief medications that rapidly cause bronchodilatation, so that these open the airways if there is spasm. And so those are the quick relief medications.
Okay.
So oftentimes a combination of those two is what we prescribe for our patients.
I got it. All right. Well, let's see what our listeners make of all this. And why don't we take a call from Melanie in Phoenix, Arizona. Melanie, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. Thank you. I love your program.
Oh, great.
The question I have is, there's a lot of research from the American Academy of Pediatrics, the EPA, and others about particulate matter and mobile source air toxins, the relation between freeway pollutants and asthma. And the findings are that 70%, a child is 70% more likely to have asthma if they reside or attend school near a freeway because they play outdoors, et cetera. So can you talk a little bit about immunology versus the environmental factors that would maybe exacerbate conditions, or is this conflicting research, or does this address the same sort of?
Sure.
Excellent
sure.
question, Melanie. Thanks.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Most asthma, perhaps 70 to 80% of asthma, is thought to be due to allergic disease. So we know that if a child or an adult becomes allergic to, say, dust mite or pollen allergens, that that is a significant risk factor for persistent wheezing. But as you point out, there are definite studies showing that exposure to particulate matter is also a risk factor for asthma. And it's possible that way to put this together is that the common pathway is through these natural killer T cells. So the way we're starting to look at this is that allergens induce some amount of inflammation that releases glycolipid antigens, which then activate NK T cells, these natural killer T cells. It is also possible that particulate matter causes some kind of damage or injury to the lungs, and this also results in the release of these glycolipid antigens that activate NK T cells.
Okay, I let you get away with it once, but what is a glycolipid antigen?
Right, right. So glycolipids are essentially lipids or fats,
mm-hmm.
and the a big difference between conventional T cells that the Th2 cells that individuals scientists have been studying in the past was that those conventional T cells respond to protein antigens, whereas these natural killer T cells respond to these lipids. And so this opens up a whole new window where we must look at these lipids that are activating.
Yeah, this sounds like a very important shift in the way scientists will be looking at asthma if you're changing the whole class of the kinds of kinds of antigens, these molecules that the immune system is going to respond to.
Exactly. So we think that this is almost a paradigm shift where the cell type is different and the antigens that they respond to are also quite different.
Okay, well, let's take another call now and let's go to Sunita in Cincinnati. Sunita, welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
I'm calling as somewhat of a quasi-expert because I have two children who both have severe asthma. They are on a lot of medications, and happy to say they're doing very well this year, although last year they both had pneumonia at different times. I have, my background is one where I'm, an Indian from Asia, and they're 13 generations back. I'm Indian in my family. On my husband's side, he's Germanic and Italian. And I don't know, I have sort of a theory. I have two different theories. One is that all the immunizations that our children have received over the years, and especially how they've been stepped up, you know, when my children were young, they got so much more than I ever did. And is anybody researching whether that predisposes children to not just asthma, but also severe allergies? You sort of mentioned allergies are related. My kids also have severe peanut allergies.
Sunita, wait a second. Now let's get the answer to question one first.
Okay.
All right, Dr. Umetsu.
Well, I think that we do know that the prevalence of allergies and asthma have increased quite substantially over the last two decades, essentially doubling over the last 20 years. And we don't know for sure why that is. And one hypothesis is that our Western society is cleaner. There's less germs, and we use more antibiotics. And part of that theory is that we immunize people so that they don't get infections. So that's the theory, that we're just cleaner. It's called the hygiene hypothesis. But the data that support that, unfortunately, is not that strong. Mm-hmm. There are some studies trying to look specifically at immunizations and their relationship to the development of allergy and asthma. Mm-hmm. And there doesn't seem to be any good relationship. So at the moment, we don't believe that immunizations are a factor in causing allergies and asthma.
Dr. Dale Umetsu is a senior associate in medicine immunology at Children's Hospital in Boston. We're talking about asthma, and we're taking your calls. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Could I
ask that? Yes, Sunita, go ahead and ask your second question, or your second theory.
My second question was, is there any way that, because we have two almost, well, not really different races, but two different backgrounds, where my family grew up eating a tremendous amount of legumes, and my husband's ate not very many, and my children are, and I ate legumes throughout my pregnancies, and both my kids have life-threatening allergies to peanuts, which is something that I always ate a lot of. My younger one also has very bad soy.
Sunita, we have to be careful. We can't speak to specific cases mm-hmm. here, but I think we get the idea here, then, that is that there's there anything about someone's diet in general or particular food background that could interact with their genetic background that might make them more susceptible to asthma, Dr. Umetsu?
That's a very common question, and we don't have the final answer on this, but there actually have been many, many studies that have looked at the diets of pregnant women and the development of allergies in their children. And if you look at all of the studies together, there doesn't seem to be a pattern. So that's the data that's present.
Right.
It's possible that eating peanuts during pregnancy has effects in some mothers, and that's a common scenario in my practice. I certainly see many kids who have peanut allergy, and mothers say, "Well, they ate lots of peanuts during pregnancy," but unfortunately, we just don't have good studies to say eating peanuts results in peanut allergy at this time.
Okay, we have time, I think, for one more quick question, and we'll take Marilyn in Miami. Go ahead, Marilyn.
Hi, I have the fortune to live in a beautiful city like Miami. Unfortunately, you all are aware that we've had a lot of storms. My son is 14, and 6 months after he was born, we had Hurricane Andrew. That was a significant storm, if you recall. Immediately after that, he started suffering from asthma, 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, very, very sick. He eventually outgrew it around 9 years old. We were doing so much better. I was thrilled. And as you recall, we've had a massive storm season this last season. Sure enough, in October, he got really, really sick.
Marilyn, we're going to have to just, I think the question is there a relationship there? And if that's
go.
All right, I'll ask Dr. Umetsu to answer that because we don't really have a lot more time left. Go ahead, Dr. Umetsu.
Well, I must say I'm not aware of any study that has looked at the relationship between hurricanes or bad weather and asthma. I can see how it might be related in that perhaps the hurricane season results in more mold being present in the house, but I can't say for sure.
And as Marilyn was saying, it just strikes me that maybe major storms like that cause a lot of anxiety, which can also lead to asthma, I suppose.
That's certainly possible.
All right. Well, I guess we'll have to leave things there. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Dale Umetsu. He's a senior associate in medicine in the Department of Immunology at Children's Hospital in Boston and the Prince Turki Al-Saud Professor of Pediatrics at Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts. Thanks for joining me today.
Right. Thank you, Joe.
Earlier this hour, we talked with Dr. Alfred McEwen. He's the principal investigator on the high-resolution imaging science experiment on the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. And Linda Detweiler, she's a former senior staff veterinarian at the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, which is a part of the United States Department of Agriculture. This program is produced by Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Our director is Charles Bergquist. Our interns are Flora Lichtman and Andrea Thompson. Katie Dunn and Odette Youssef worked the phones for us today. If you'd like to write to us, please send your letters to Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. For internet mail, you can email us. The address is scifry@npr.org. Check out sciencefriday.com for more information and links to today's program. You can listen to past editions of Science Friday online or take them with you as a podcast. And check out Science Friday's Kids Connection, free curriculum materials for teaching science using Science Friday. Just click on the teachers link on sciencefriday.com. For NPR News in Washington, I'm Joe Palca.